Welcome to episode 574 of the MTT Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTT Goldfish, Richard. How you doing this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. I would like a refund on my Super Bowl experience.
Seriously, that game. Hold on, wait. Goodness.
You know what's actually funny, though? Watching the ad meta every year. This year, the ad meta was AI and GLP-1. God. I learned what GLP-1 was this weekend, guys. Do you know what that is?
It's Ozempic. Please, enlighten us.
Oh, it's Ozempic. Okay.
Yeah, I'm like, what are all these GLP-1 commercials? Like, what is this? Like, what's going on? It's Ozempic.
Have you seen
like,
The Substance,
spin-offs.
Richard? The movie? The Substance?
No. Wait, is it about Ozempic?
I should watch it.
Wait, was that about Ozempic? I watched The Substance. I didn't really make the connection, but now that you mention, I'm like, oh, I could kind of see that.
The Substance is a lot more than that, at least what it represents. But there is just that whole Ozempic thing.
The ending of that movie. The ending of the movie got me by surprise. Wow. I was not expecting that ending.
Is this a new movie? When was this released?
It was like a couple years ago, maybe.
Two years ago. But phenomenal movie.
It was a good movie. And we got another co-host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How you doing today?
I, too, would like a refund on my AFC championship, actually. And I still...
You just need a minute of the divisional
then
round back.
I want a refund on the divisional round, please.
Well, okay, all right, Seth. No more refunds after this point, conveniently. Because at least if it were the Broncos, they may have lost, but it would have been like 10-7.
Yeah. I think it would have been closer if it was the Broncos. The Patriots, I mean... As a Bills fan, I was kind of rooting for the Patriots to get destroyed, so I was a little happy about that. I was hoping they'd get shut out, actually, because no team's ever been shut out before, but unfortunately, they didn't quite
can't
do that
get everything
badly,
we want.
Yeah. Anyway, today, we have a lot of interesting topics. So, our biggest topics today, we got a B&R update that just dropped. Don't get too excited, but there is some news in there. Lauren Eclipse Limited, I want to ask you guys about Lauren Eclipse Limited, because my God, am I struggling with this format, and I want to know if the format's bad, or if I'm just bad. So I was going to ask you about that. We got some secret lair news and then a bunch of like little topics we're going to jump through at the end of the podcast. So that's the overview for today. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. Normally, if you use our code MTGGoldfish, you'll get 10% off your order. But for any new shipment created between now and February 14th, the discount is doubled up to 20%. So if you want to sell some cards and get a fast payment with all the hassles, head over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish and use code MTGGoldfish at checkout to get 20% off. So thank you to Card Conduit for supporting this show. Our show is also brought to you by HeavyPlay Advanced Gaming Equipment. The RFG Deckbox Max features a clear window to showcase your commander while protecting your deck. Available in three different sizes to fit all of your decks, including your standard and commander decks, the equipment makes system lets you attach optional dice boxes or even multiple decks together. Head over to heavyplay.com/MTGGoldfish or use the code MTGGoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some magic. And let's start with the big news today, which is it is B&R update day. So we had B&R update for 60 card formats, and we also got a commander ban list update, which we're going to talk about a little bit, but we're going to do a whole Commander Clash podcast on the commander update that's going to go up tomorrow. So we're not going to go super deep in commander here, so keep an eye out for that tomorrow if you want to hear more about the commander stuff. But anyway, Richard, what'd they actually change on these B&Rs?
All right, commander. A lot of hoop to do about Rhystic Study. Nothing happened, boys. Biorhythm is unbanned.
Hey.
Okay, that's the 8 drop that like sets each player's life equal to the number of creatures. Okay, like whatever. Lutri, the Spell Chaser, our favorite otter companion, is unbanned but remains banned as a companion. Otter players rejoice. You now have one more card to add to your deck. Interesting is Farewell is a game changer now. Richard just died a little inside. I'm not going to comment further. Historic.
Richard just died inside.
They just threw out the whole format. Historic. Okay, here we go. Banned. Eldrazi Temple, Ajani Nikadal Pariah, Crop Rotation, Scholar of the Lost Trove. all banned. Unbanned. Vagus of the moon. Harbinger of the seas. Force of vigor. Force of negation. Endurance. Wilderness. Reclamation. Agent of treachery. So historic's like a brand new format. Alchemy. Some stuff happened. No one cares. Timeless. Necropotence is finally restricted.
Yeah, that one caught me by surprise. I thought the Timeless was just the Wild West. I think it makes sense to restrict Necro, especially after, oh no, I want to say Worlds, but it wasn't Worlds. Whatever the big tournament we had, it was something, and it just kind of dominated that tournament. So it does make sense, I think, to restrict it. I'm excited. We'll talk about Commander in a minute. I'm excited about these historic changes. I used to play a lot of historic, and Modern Horizons 3 kind of killed historic for me on Arena because of the Eldrazi deck. We ended up, and they mentioned this in the article, Wizards kind of saw it the same way, but we ended up in this weird spot where they printed like a modern level Eldrazi deck with Eldrazi Temple and Sanctum of Ugin and just all the good Eldrazi we got from Modern Horizons 3, but then all the interaction was banned down to Spreading Seas, which somehow they managed to unban Magus of the Moon and Harbinger of the Seas, but didn't unban Spreading Seas, so I don't know what they're doing on that one. But there was no way to interact with this, so I'm actually very excited for Historic now. I think it's going to be way more fun with Eldrazi nerfed, with Ajani in the Energy deck nerfed, and also in the Alchemy section. The one thing that is relevant for Historic there is Valmaroon Surveyor was like a tier one combo deck where you just can combo any. It's a 2-drop, a 2/3 with Vigilance, so whenever you Discover, Investigate, Scry, Surveil, or Seek one or more cards, it deals one damage and gain a life. There's a bunch of 2-card combos with this, so this was a really good deck. But they doubled its mana cost from 2 to 4 specifically to keep it from working in Historic anymore. So Historic's going to be a brand new format. Krim, have you played Historic in a while? Like, do these changes make you want to try it again if you haven't been playing it recently?
I tried to play recently and I hated everything that happened. And then I just stopped. I was like, why did I ever stop playing Standard for a second? I think that, yeah, like maybe I'll try it again. Mostly just because I did love playing Historic, right? Like, Historic was one of my favorites to play at the time, and even Timeless to a point was really good, right? But Necropotence kind of took over, so I'm happy to see that go. I am a little bit shocked still by some of these cards coming off the ban list or getting added onto the ban list, mostly just because I don't know why. Is Ajani that bad?
I mean, Historic's such a weird format because of Modern Horizon 3, they essentially just printed the best deck in Modern into Historic because all the pieces pretty much come from Modern Horizons 3. And it is like, I would say the second, I think there's 3 tier one decks, which I would say Eldrazi was number 1, Energy was number 2, and then the Vial or Veils combo deck is number 3. So I think they wanted to hit all of them. I'm fine with Ajani being banned because I think Energy, even though it is hateable, it is like very good. And I'm just excited for the shakeup, but I don't know. I could see an argument for not banning it too. Like, I don't find Energy to be the most offensive best deck in a format. Like, as far as best decks, that's why I don't complain about Modern too much right now. Like, even though it's the best deck in the format, when you're like attacking with creatures and whatever, you die to a sweeper. Like, I think that's probably a decent place for the best deck in the format to be. So it is a little weird, but I think I'm okay with that one.
I feel like Ajani's just so fair, right? Like, it is in that world, it's just like, I get Eldrazi Temple. Eldrazi Temple is always scary, and Eldrazis have always, when unchecked, will do a lot, right? Crop Rotation, I understand, and Scholar as well. Those are all very nasty cards that needed to go.
Yep.
But Ajani is shocking to me. That's just like banning a Tarmogoyf to me in this world.
I'm curious, Richard, what do you think of these unbans? Because philosophically, in part to separate the format from Timeless, and also in part to make it a place that people could kind of like play their own Standard decks and whatever, it used to be a much more casual format when it launched, they had this rule about basically no mass land destruction or mass land denial, no free spells, almost like a version of Commander in some ways, these unwritten rules. But anyway, they decided to change their philosophy here, and all of a sudden they were freeing the Magus of the Moons and Harbinger of the Seas. There's Force of Vigor, there's Force of Negation, there's Endurance. You think that's a good thing? Like, is the format going to be better having these spells freed?
Nah. I think Timeless became Vintage and Historic became Legacy, essentially. So, like, originally there was no Timeless, right? So Historic was where all the stuff would go. And now they're upping the power level of Historic. So your dreams of like your old standard deck being playable like are gone. Like it's a different world out here with
adding me right now.
You know, like fast combos, like backbreaking stacks. Like it's its own metagame, right? You can't just play random stuff and fight through this. So this is just a different metagame. They're just differentiating it from Timeless slightly, but especially with the alchemy cards, you have like no chance of playing like your standard stuff, right? So yeah. This is high powered older format. you're gonna play Bitter Blossom. Yeah. When you're stacked out, you can at least make a 1/1 every turn.
Hold on, that's half a card, or maybe even a card and a half. I don't know. What do you want?
Yo, inflation, Krim. That's like a quarter of a card nowadays.
Dang it, dude. Inflation happening here too. God dang it.
What do you guys think, before we talk about the commander stuff a little bit, what do you think about no changes to the paper formats? Were you hoping for or expecting changes to standard, pioneer, modern, legacy, vintage? Like, does any of this catch you by surprise to see no changes across the board outside of Arena?
I think in Carmen's article, she had kind of talked a little bit about it. And standard right now, there's no by far best deck. Right. There's no obvious 47 or 50% deck. And I agree. Right. Right now, standard is absurdly fun. It's pricey, but it is absurdly fun right now. And I'm talking like the joys I'm having playing either Tamir Midrange, which is actually, this is going to sound biased, but actually well placed right now, and or the Dimir, Excruciator combo. You know, there's a lot of decks you can play, and if you're not a Dimir guy, you've got, the Teemer one that Tony played to the finals, and there's just lots of good decks that are running around right now. I don't know. I mean, I like this whole meta right now.
What do you think, Richard?
I didn't watch the Pro Tour, but I thought standard is the best it's ever been, except for price. Right? Yeah. Is that not the case? We have a very diverse metagame. We have different strategies. Badgermole Cub is scary, but you can tech to build to fight it, so it's okay. The only disgusting thing is your Badgermole Cub decks cost like $1,000. Wait, has it gone down? Nope. It's like $900.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you just think about that for a second, that's like a case, half a case of any other TCG, right? Like, you look at people buying cases of stuff, you're like, I think there are better life decisions to be made, my friend. That's just everyone playing standard, right? So, I don't know, like, Richard. $900? Like, who rolls up? Like, Badgermole Cup is not meta, because I can't imagine someone bringing a $900 deck to like FNM, right? So this is only like Pro Tour level, you're gonna shell out all the money, and it's probably not, it's like everyone borrowing their deck from the same like five people, right? But like $900, oh my goodness. Like a standard deck should cost $100, 200 tops, right? Like this is too much for a rotating format.
And
ugly cards, I'm gonna say it, right? It's not like it's $900 of alt arts and like blinged out crap, right? It's $900 of base rarity stuff that will rotate. The next BNR will like make it evaporate, right? Like this is too much, boys. Like $900 for standard. Like let me check a legacy deck. Let's not check legacy deck. Oh, legacy is expensive. All spells is $1,000. Let's check a modern deck. Okay, so we're in line with modern decks. Yeah, Boros Energy is $800. The cheaper decks are around $400-$500. That's like the same price.
The prices are essentially this very close to the same. I would say modern is like slightly more expensive because you don't really have too many competitive like $200 or $300 decks, which there are a few in standard. But the prices are comparable. I was actually going to ask you this: like, if you had, let's go with $1,000, which is an insane number. Like that is literally more than my house payment is each month, and I live in a cheap area. But still, like, it blows my mind that people would just like that's the price you need to play standard. But let's say you have $1,000 of free money. Money that you can spend on whatever you want. Like, are you realistically going to spend that on a standard deck or a modern deck? Or you could buy a bunch of commander decks, especially if you build kind of budget-friendly decks. You probably build 10 commander decks. Or would you spend it on something non-magic related altogether? And I think the more prices go up, and we've had this argument for a while. I remember a prof video where it's about like, oh, do you buy a box or a deck or like a new PlayStation, whenever it was PlayStation 3 when it first came out or whatever. Like, so we've had these comparisons before, but I think as prices keep going up, the other options have to become more appealing for people, and the magic decks have to become less appealing, right? Like, if you had a grand of free money, would you spend it on a standard deck or on magic at all?
I mean, you're asking the wrong.
Krim is like, yo, I want to spend
think
five
of all
grand.
The you're right. Plushies you could get, Krim. All their X-Men.
I would definitely... There are better things you can be doing with it, sure. But this, I think Magic is an expensive hobby. Card games are the most expensive hobbies you could probably have in 2026.
No, but isn't Magic worse than the rest, though? Like, isn't Magic, like, kind of extreme compared to the competitors right now?
So, I posted this in our Patreon Discord, okay? So, you know, the new Riftbound set is out, right? Everyone's talking about Riftbound. The first thing you hear about Riftbound, scalpers are out of control. Everything is so expensive. You know, you can't afford Riftbound. I want to afford Riftbound. I cannot play Riftbound. I looked at the deck prices last week. $300 for the most expensive deck. Tier one deck. Kaisa, Annie, $300. I was like, interesting. This is very affordable, guys. I'm like, everyone's like, $300. Are you crazy? Like, scalpers are ruining our game. And here we are. Oh, yeah, Badger Bowl Cup, $900, yeah. Right?
That's like a budget.
We're not even talking
deck.
About like all the other games, like, I don't know, Union Arena, One Piece, whatever. You roll up with your $40
deck.
Union
Arena is not real. Union Arena is not real.
But like, there are other card games that are significantly cheaper. Riftbound, the hottest new TCG. Everything's, you know, everything is like out of this world pricing. Cheaper than the cheapest standard deck you could possibly buy, right?
Wait,
so...
Annie's like $600 though.
Oh, did it go up again? No, Flash went down. I was just looking this last weekend. It was like 400, 300, 400.
Flash must have gone down then, but that is still a very expensive deck.
Like Kaisa is only 300, right?
Just all Kaisa.
I was like, wow, right? Like, I think Magic players have just gotten used to it, but like $900 was a modern deck, and a modern deck that you were supposed to play forever, right? Like, because that price used to be all fetch lands and like, you know, S-tier staples that you could play for 10 years, not Badger Bowl Cub that as soon as it rotates is going to be worth like close to $0, right? So I don't know. This is way too high. And the saving grace is on Arena. A mythic is a mythic, right? Yeah. So on Arena, it doesn't matter, right? Like, it's just how many mythics are in here and the fact that all these cards cost so much. But even then, you're limited by mythic wild cards, and decks nowadays are just like all mythics, right? Like, yeah. the all mythics and a stock up, like that's the deck, right?
A lot of the tier decks are pretty expensive on Arena too. Like, if you go by, yeah, just wild card prices, they're also, I don't think, like, hugely more expensive than the past, but I do think we have even more rares and mythics than we have at various points in the past. It's interesting to me that this hasn't been a very big conversation, because I remember when we had Jace Friends Prodigy and $1,000 standard decks like 10 years ago in like 2015 standard, it was a big deal. Like, that was one of the big things people were talking about, but I haven't heard that much about it. I don't know if, I guess $1,000 deck 10 years ago would be way more today with inflation and stuff, but still, yeah. Like, I haven't seen this be as much of a conversation. So I don't know. I guess we are maybe desensitized to it. I think it's also that,
also
like,
not the only
Magic
deck.
Is. Not the only deck. That is also true.
Right.
Not the
That's
only
the main
deck.
Of the years. Not the only deck. Dimir is like 300.
I also think Magic probably should be, and this sounds weird because I want Magic to be as cheap as possible. In some ways, I think it makes sense that Magic is more expensive than the other games because it's kind of like a safe haven. It's got this like 30-year track record. When I think of buying into a new TCG that's like a year or two old, I always have this fear of like, yeah, but is it going to be here in 3 years? Like, maybe it makes it, maybe it doesn't. Magic has kind of like proven that it's going to be here in 3 years, in 5 years, in 10 years, because it's already been around for 30 years. Doesn't make it any better that we have to pay insane amounts to get our cardboard, but I could see why like Magic would be a safer game to buy into than One Piece or Riftbound, just because you have this history you can look back on.
Are we gonna go with shady financial advice, Seth? So I mean, Magic is safe. Is Quantum Riddler safe? Is Badger Bowl Cub safe? Probably not. And, you know, if I was to roll the dice, I'm like, I'm just going to incinerate money. You buy a $300 Riftbound deck, that could be your, like, Power 9 deck in the beginning, right?
That's true.
If you played One Piece, we discovered that Krim is rich, right? If Krim just digs out his One Piece pile, they've all, like, 10x'd in price, right? So he's actually, like, super positive on whatever he spent on, right? No matter how expensive his card, it, like, increased. So if you were to spend a lot of money, would you not roll the dice on Riot and, like, you know, like, is Riot going to let the game disappear? How big will Riftbound become? Like, is it that better than, like, for sure Badgermul Cub is going to tank afterwards, right? Like, for sure that is not, like, a Tri-Land or, you know, some new dual land that just came out, right? That's just a mythic, right? In a specific color, in a specific strategy, so... I don't know. We got to get these prices to zero, Seth, not more.
we do. No. I don't want prices to go up. I want prices to go down. I do think it's fair to say with Riftbound in specific, Riot, like, backing it probably makes it safer than some other options. And that technique could definitely work. Like, it worked for Krim buying his One Piece cards. But also, like, I remember when One Piece first launched.
It wasn't,
like,
a financial play to buy One Piece cards, by the way.
You were playing One Piece.
I want to make that very clear. I just play card games.
But I remember when we were talking about when One Piece first came out, we were like, well, like, yeah, the game is fun and people like it, but it's made by this company that kind of has a track record of their games disappearing very quickly. So, like, will it still be here? So it worked out in this case that it's gotten even more popular. But there's other games, but if you bought MetaZoo or whatever, like, those cards are probably not 10xing in value after a few years.
One Piece is spiking also because of collecting. Right. And like the Poke Bro, like all the bros, like the crypto bros, the sneaker bros, they went from, you know, they tried to do that with Magic. They realized people actually play Magic. And then that was when they're like, okay, we're done here. Right. We got to spike the next market. And then they went and spiked One Piece. So, I just want to say that I think that that is, by the way, very wild. And once again, the IP is carrying One Piece. The game is, like, it's still really popular, though, otherwise, but it just also has collecting now. So, but Riot, I do believe in. I believe in their, like, because, like, it's Riftbound, right? Like, so this is their first, like, digital or non-digital thing that they've gotten into. And it's pretty damn fun, dude. Like, there's a lot here. You get a unique experience when you play the game. So, I don't know. We'll see if it goes the way of Bandai, though, because I remember teaching you two with my starter decks in Vegas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
One
like
Piece.
Two or three years ago. Yeah, that's when I learned how to play One Piece.
And it was so mechanically fun that I played it without ever watching a single episode of One Piece or doing anything about One Piece, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now I'm a nom, by the way, right? So here we are. I did binge watch this weekend YouTube shorts, and my favorite shorts are Coop's collection. Like, he just vends at card shows, and like he just gives free Pokemon cards to kids. But the culture around it, they're not like, oh, yo, give me the deck, give me the card from like the tier one deck, right? They're just like, my favorite character is Caterpie. What Caterpie cards do you have? And he's like, I got these 8 Caterpie cards. Which ones do you want, right? Like, we don't do that in Magic, right? Like, are you like, oh, I like elves. What elf cards do you have, right? You're like, no, let me go to EDH rack. What are the top 10 elf cards, right? Yeah. So, like, there's a difference. We don't collect cards for art. We don't.
I do.
Okay,
I do.
Krim is special. Krim is special. But I don't know. Like, we don't have that collecting culture. That collecting culture sort of exists in One Piece. It's still player driven, right? But you know, there are people that play their favorite characters and only collect cards from their favorite characters. And if you chose a waifu 5 years ago, 4 years ago, you're like making bank today, right? So there is that kind of thing. But Magic doesn't have that. And Magic is just driven by meta, but meta changes. Like, this is the problem, right? Like, today, Simic Ouroboroid is a top-tier deck, but it's not going to be in the future. Prices will tank, and then you're just left holding not as much money as you put in, right? So I think that's a problem, right?
And I agree that is a problem, but, like, remember, again, this is not the only deck. There's a lot of other decks that are, like, still around, like, you know, 300, right? Which is a lot. right? When you think about like a competitive card game, but for the player base that Magic has, I know often people like to bring up Pokemon, but Pokemon, there's a difference, right? There's a gap there in between like, you know, playing and collecting. Magic has a lot of players. And for that, there's still, I don't know if we'll ever see like a $60 deck or anything like that, as much as I would love that. What is a number you think would be realistically possible? Like, do you think I think $300 is real.
No.
300, right?
I mean, $100, like $100 would be great, but that would be a huge shift though, right? Like there haven't been $100 tier standard decks in my time of playing Magic, like in the last 20
Same.
Years or whatever.
It has so,
like,
never
yes,
been 100.
Yes, it would be 100. Cool, but like, I don't know if it's realistic to have the baseline go lower than it was 20 years ago. I think like, all things considered, $300 doesn't seem that bad to me. And maybe that's just my Magic brain when I'm used to modern decks being $1,000 and standard decks being $500 or $800 now. So maybe it's just because I'm a Magic player. Does that seem too much to you, Richard? Is that too much to draw?
The whole point of playing TCGs, there's two reasons you play TCGs. One is to crack packs. Okay, so The fact that collector packs are like $8 billion is like a travesty. And you're like, oh, they're only for collectors. Like, no, everyone wants to rip packs, right? So one is ripping packs, which is not related to this. And two, it's brewing. Okay, you cannot brew when it costs you $300 to switch decks, right?
Yeah.
What you ideally want is a new standard set comes out and you're like, oh, I'll pay $50, $60 to buy the cards to try this like random deck that probably sucks, but you know, who knows, right? It's like $60. It's a night out. It's cool. Versus $300. Let me watch 8 pros play a gauntlet to figure out what the best deck is. Let me spend 8,000 years researching and invest in this $300 deck and ride it for this whole standard. And if the meta changes or I don't like the deck, well, screw me, right? I'll just not enjoy my time, right? So that's the difference, right? You want decks to be cheap so that you can brew, you can hop around, you can experiment, you can, you know, put in and out pet cards, right? Like, what? Imagine if you could put Badgermole Cub in your jank tier 2 deck, right? Like, oh, you know, maybe now it's tier 1.5, right? You can't do that with these prices. It defeats the whole purpose of this game, right? So you want to freely brew, and the price has to be low enough that you can just, quote unquote, throw away decks. Right? Like, yeah, it sucked, but I had fun for 2 months, whatever, right? Like, and it's got to be like $50, $100. And you can do that, just make everything rare, right? The difference is today, our prices are being bolstered or held up by Commander and Secret Lair. So yes, they can, you know, make your standard decks a lot cheaper, right? Because the money is going to Commander players and Secret Lairs. So we can do $100 standard decks. Wizards chooses not to. They choose to make our deck full of like mythics. Like, why is Badgermole Cub a mythic? I don't know. Right? Why is Quantum Riddler a mythic? I don't know. Right? Like, you know, like, okay, one Planeswalker can be mythic. Why does every playable card have to be a mythic? Right?
I think it's even worse than that, though, like structurally, because like I do think this is definitely Wizard's fault. But I think like here's why I think this is Wizard's fault. So last week we talked a bit about prices on the podcast. And one of the things I mentioned was the fact that we're getting more like Lotus Cobra style mythics, right? The Badgermole Cubs, the Quantum Riddlers, these four of constructed cards printed mythic. But there's something I didn't bring up that I think is also just as relevant is there's just more mythics now, which means the odds of opening any individual mythic is way lower than the past. It used to be very set in stone that like every set, if it was a small set, 10 mythics, a big set, 15 mythics. Now the normal number is 20 mythics per set. And Lore and Eclipse has 22 mythics. We've seen, I think, as high as 25 mythics in some sets. So basically your odds of opening that Badgermole Cub drops 33% or something compared to a set released 5 years ago when there were only 15 mythics, because the drop rate for mythics overall hasn't increased. So there's more mythics, each individual mythic is scarcer, and they're being pushed as four of constructed cards. So I think that's the heart of the problem, really. I don't know if just making everything rares is as good of a solution as some people think, just because, like, I've heard this argument before, but from what I remember of the pre-rare days, and this was when I first started playing Magic, but what I remember from the pre-mythic days is that, yes, the high-end cards would be lower, but then you're paying $20 for your pain lands or whatever. Like, a lot of the rares now that you can get for a dollar dollar or two would go up in price under that system. Maybe it would still even out to be a positive in the end. But I do think you'd see like the Badger Mole Cubs and Quantum Riddlers come down. But then you'd see Strylands or whatever. These just like nuts and bolts cards that are super cheap. Those would climb up to a few bucks. So it'd be interesting.
I mean, Exalted Angel would have been the same as a Mythic, right? Way back in Standard. And that card was like 30, 40 bucks.
Yeah.
Right? So yep. I needed a playset of those. So I saved all my lunch money. And so I literally just did not eat lunch so I could build my Exalted Angel. There.
And this is why Crim is the way he is.
Crim is a true gamer, yep.
Gotta get him while they're young.
And look how it all turned out. But legitimately, though, like I think that, yeah, like everything being Mythic is kind of a little awkward because like I think all the Bitterbloom bearers that I opened, I think I opened a total of one out of like yep. three play boosters and three collectors. I opened one base version and I was like, wow. And, yep. and I finally opened one. There is a lot of Mythics nowadays and I don't know how I feel about that. Right. Like it's... I guess they should just put it at a rare, but I guess that's asking for a lot, right? If you want something that's going to be hyper playable and standard, but maybe you're right that like it being downshifted to a rare doesn't change much.
Yeah, I think
it's a commander problem too. It's yeah. like Seth's point of they have too many mythics. There's too many quote unquote unplayable cards, right? Like you can't play with any of the four limited cards. You can't play with any of the commander cards. So there's only a handful of rares and mythics that are playable in standard. And then those get all the value. Everything else is like zero. If it was more evenly distributed, right? Like if every mythic was the same price, I think it's actually better, right? So
the problem is that there's Badger bulk mythics.
Would be cheap. Yeah, like why make bulk mythics?
Yeah, just like put those at rare.
It's kind of funny though, because that's like how the arena economy works. And it's great when you need Badger Mole Cub, but boy, does it suck when you want a bulk rare for brewing. Like, I think the price is $10 a mythic on Arena if you buy the wild cards, if I remember right. So having Badger Mole Cub be $10 is great, but having all the dollar mythics end up $10 is actually, like, super annoying, too. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope they do something, though, because if these prices just keep snowballing, I think it is going to just price more and more people, if not out of the game, out of constructed formats, because they're going to be like, I can build one of Tomer's $50 budget commander decks, and I can play that with my friends forever and like never worry about rotation. So I think it might price people out of playing the format, which is sad because, as we were talking about earlier, I don't know if I'd say Standard's the best it's ever been, but it's in the best place it's been in quite a while right now. So hopefully more people can experience it. But let's keep moving on. We got to hit up some other topics real quick. Like I said before, we're going to cover this in depth on the Commander Clash podcast that goes up tomorrow. But I want your take, Richard, because you're not going to be on the Commander Clash podcast. Commander changes. So farewell, a game changer. Biorhythm unbanned, Lutri unbanned, but banned as companion. Richard, what do you think about these changes?
Who cares about Biorhythm and Lutri? Okay, but farewell game changer? This is... the bracket system I already think is like hogwash. Like this whole like trying to police this casual format is like hogwash, but like we're saying that efficient interaction is like now game changing. I don't agree with this, right? Like you're gonna put it on the list of like premier game ending threats, and the argument is you slow down games. Like I don't know what the argument is, right? But we have a lot of cards that are like 98% farewell, like Undue Inversion, Hour of Revelation. Like you know, there's a lot of these cards, so I'm shocked this is here. I don't know what to say about this next Swords to Plowshares game changer. Like I don't know what we're trying to say here, but it is weird, right? We're one step away from like no counter spells allowed, right? Like don't interact with me, like don't do anything, right? Like you have to farewell. Everything is indestructible nowadays. Like what do you want? What do you want? Like stop making everything indestructible. Stop making everything graveyard recursive, right? Stop spreading the threats across every card type, right? Like, oh, it's actually this 3-man enchantment that's just gonna wreck our days. Like
it's too early in the morning.
Richard's
for you to
little,
serenade me like yeah. this. That
Richard's
was
a little too prim pill.
I agree.
Yeah,
prim holy with Richard. Holy with Richard. Thank you.
Okay, I will take the other side on this one then. I think that Farewell is unique in the Wrath category because of the fact that it exiles and the fact that it hits so many different card types. Also, Psych Rift is on the, it's been on the Game Changer list for a long time, and that hasn't been a complaint. So we already have some of these like big late game sweeper effects, at least one that have been on the Game Changer list before. So I don't really mind Farewell being a Game Changer. I also think, like, I don't know how much it matters. Like, I still don't really pay much attention to Game Changers when I build decks. I don't really build for a bracket. I guess it might have more impact on other people, but if I'm going to play Farewell, I'll just play Farewell anyway. I guess I'm bragging four. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, you're right. But without getting too deep into it, I mean, it's even then, it's not a power balancing thing. It's just the sentiment behind why you banned. Yeah, right. And that is more of the problem here for me. So I fully agree with Richard, because to me, I read this as Wrath of God plus, right? Like, or Austere Command plus. And those aren't banned. Why are we banning? Or why not banned, but why are we not game-changing interaction then at this point? Like, if you interact, you're a bracket five. You're accounting for the commander meta then at this point.
All right. I'll drop you guys this hot take and then make no further comments. We'll move on. If they're going to do this, they should make your commander an emblem. Like, indestructible, not removable, can't exile, can't bounce, can't do whatever, right? Because the whole gist of Farewell is everyone builds entirely around their commander to build some kind of engine. You know, you play all these terrible cards that you would not otherwise play to make your commander work. And one Farewell, like, ends your deck, right? Your commander is gone, your mana rocks are gone, your support pieces are gone, your deck does not do the thing anymore, so they want to get rid of Farewell. Well, if that's the case, make your commander unremovable so that you can actually put in like the non-staple cards and cards specifically only for your commander, and you don't have to worry about your commander like not being there, right? Because all of our decks are just piles of staples anyway, because if you're a good deck builder, you need to account for the case where you get interacted with, i.e. your commander's not there. Right, so you can't just have draw spells that work when your commander's on the battlefield. You have to have generic card draw, and then we end up with like half staples in our decks. So make your commander an emblem, leave Farewell alone. that is my hot take.
Ooh, that is a hot take, and I don't even think I'm going to touch that one. Let us know in the comments if you think making commanders uninteractable would be a positive change. I've never thought of that before. Mm. Emblem of commanders, yeah. And the one thing I will say is then I'd have to cast my commander, and I don't know if I'm down for that, Richard. That's the biggest issue with that plan for me.
Start with it.
Then you have to build around the card your deck is supposed to be built around. Obscene.
Yeah, I know.
Obscene.
Let's move on to some secret lair stuff. So last week, I got to know what you guys think about this. So they released a secret lair, but they did something they never done before. This was a Chaos Vault secret lair, and they released it at a whole bunch of different price points. So normally, if you get a non-foil secret lair, $30 plus shipping. This one, they had some that were $30 plus shipping, but there were also some that were $10, $20, $40. So you could get it for way less or way more than the normal price. And they made it very explicit in the article that no matter what price you buy at, you're getting the same thing. There's no, like, you get a bonus card if you buy the $40 version. No one can really figure out why they did this. Richard, do you have any idea why they would do this? It's just like, no. Some people say it's to stop scalpers. Some people say it's a marketing test. Why would you do this?
It's some kind of psychological test, and I am so insulted that they would do it in such a manner, right? Because in reality, what happens, right? The $10 secret lair, like, sold out instantly, right? Like, they have varying levels. So what they're testing is, if you know that you could buy this for $10, but you can't anymore, would you buy it for $40? Right? And I'm like, you know, companies A-B test all the time, but to do it in such, like, a, I don't know, like, an explicit manner, to be like, yo, you could have gotten it for $10, but you didn't get in. You still want it for $40? Seeing how many people would buy that, I feel this is wrong in some level, and I feel insulted. Like, I don't know, right? It feels like they're slapping you. Like, you still want this card? Slap, right? You still want it? Like, let's see how bad he wants it. Slap, right? So I don't know why they would do it like this, right? Like, the same test would be everyone goes to the page, and they see a different price. They only see one price for them. Right? People would still complain if you go on Reddit and find out about it, but it wouldn't be so in your face, right? Because companies A-B test all the time. But the fact that you go there and you see $10 sold out, $20 sold out, $30 sold out, oh, now $40, do you still want? That rubs me the wrong way. So I don't know what they're trying to do here. I don't know. I don't know, but it feels bad.
Is this some version of like dynamic pricing in Magic? I was watching this video about how like some supermarkets now are trying to have like prices that update in real time, essentially. Like if it gets warmer outside, maybe your water goes up in price and your lemonade goes up in price and like stuff like that, where you can just change things on the fly to milk as much money out of people as possible, essentially. So I wonder if this is Wizards' attempt to get in on something like that or like test something like that.
I don't understand the whole, like, I don't know what they were doing either. I have no idea why, like, you would even have so many different price entry points, right? Like,
they did a stream talking for the whole hour talking about Secret Lairs. And according to the stream, they said that their intentions were good, that 95% of the stock was intended for below or at normal pricing, and only 5% were the more expensive versions. They learned a lot about it. They expected it to be a more positive reception, but they got a negative reception, essentially. So
that's the thing. Like, I, again, don't understand. If you want to just set it below, then just set it below. Why turn what is, you know, you already kind of like a gotcha experience into a gotcha within the gotcha? Oh,
yeah,
I low rolled.
That 5%,
I got the high price tag, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand that.
I think Seth is right. I think what they really wanted was the dynamic pricing. So, for example, it releases at, let's say, $30. And then when there's only like 1,000 left in stock or something, it increases to $40. And then when there's only 500 left in stock, it increases to $60 or something like that. But technologically, that's difficult. They have to do something to make that happen. And they're not sure if they wanted it. So they did this as some kind of pseudo stand-in for that. But I don't think it accomplished what they want. Because everyone's just like, wow, that's insulting, right? But like,
yeah,
Amazon does this, right? Like, the price of an item changes depending on when you look at it, how many people have bought it already, et cetera, right? So I think they're trying to do the dynamic pricing or the lightning deals or whatever, but the way they did it was just scuffed and like kind of insulting. Yeah. But I expect dynamic pricing to come, right? What you have a super hot secret lair, rather than sell out, we'll just do scalper prices, Krim.
Yeah,
we'll
just jack it up.
As the stock goes down, we increase the price so that only, you know, the most foolish of, you know, the people that wanted the most pay more, right? That's what they're doing.
Speaking of secret lairs and scalpers, other news to come out of this stream that I thought was interesting. Two things, really. One is they can't do print to demand because essentially, and this is my paraphrasing, but essentially they aren't good enough at estimating demand, and they use the same printers that do the main sets. So they can't do print to demand secret lairs. The other thing they said, and I'm curious if you buy this number, they said that 0.5, so less than 1%, half of 1% of secret lair sales go to scalpers or bad actors. So that would mean one out of every 200 secret lairs sold would be bought by a scalper of some kind. If that number is correct, then scalping isn't a problem, right? If 199 out of 200 are going to players and one out of 200 is going to scalpers, could they have on the market if it's really that number?
Scalper?
I think you can definitely do that, tweak things to where that number could be true, but it doesn't seem likely, right? I am very curious as to, first off, how do you differentiate a bot and a scalper, right? Yes, you can figure out a bot. You can definitely clock a bot, but how are you blocking, you know, John Doe from just buying 3,000 or whatever, right? Obviously, there's the limit, but you could have multiple computers and different things like that as well. So I just don't know how they differentiate that. Richard, is there a way without it? You know, I mean, I feel like you'd be more experienced in this department.
There's probably some way to figure out, okay, this guy buying 1,000 will just declare him a scalper. He could just be an LGS or something, right? Or people using bots. But, you know, if someone buys 4, are they scalping or not? Right? If they buy 3 to flip on eBay and 1 for their personal collection, are they scalping or not? Like, that's why
that
it's weird it's weird to like do this, right? If I just buy every secret lair, but half of them I sell and half of them I keep, am I scalping or not? Right? That's why it's weird to be able to just definitively say it's scalping or not. But I tend to agree with the WotC thing. Like, most people don't scout magic, like the like maybe the high end, like the high demand stuff, like Final Fantasy, Avatar,
the
Marvel
calendar
they're,
thing.
They're scalping,
we had.
Right? But like all the other secret layers, like no one cares, right? Yeah. So that 1%, even if you could measure it somehow, probably makes sense. But I don't
except
know, right?
Evil like, Dead, Richard. Evil Dead, Jaws. Have you seen it's the like, Jaws secret layer?
Yeah.
Wait, is it expensive?
It's
or
super
not?
Expensive now.
Is it? Wow.
Yes.
Maybe I should be buying. Should the other thing they confirmed, I wasn't even going to bring this up, but they did reconfirm, we will never reprint the secret layer cards. If you buy them, you, there will never be another printing of this version, the art or whatever. Like, it's,
oh, okay.
Not
okay.
Not that they won't reprint some version of the card, but they'll never reprint that art in that style card. And border again. Yeah, that exact version. So it's, I guess it's a good place for financial stuff to be in Magic. Like, I think as far as players are concerned, that's like the least harmful place for people to do finance stuff, because it's the most outside of unique secret layer drops, which are an issue. But for reprints, like, I don't know, if you want to print really expensive versions and secret layers and people want to finance them, like, I don't think that's really hurting people trying to play Standard or Commander too much. So anyway, let's keep moving on. Speaking of finance, did you guys see the new elemental frames that they put on Magic Arena last week? They hyped this announcement a little bit. They're going to do these new frames. You can buy them in the store. They put them up. There's a few different bundles of them. They are very expensive. There's a bundle of like popular Brawl commanders that you get. You don't even get the card. You just get this new border. It was $50, I believe, for the either one of the big commander bundles. It was half of one of the big gem bundles, so around $50. What do you guys think of this border? I was actually kind of curious, and I think this is one of the ugliest things I've ever seen, personally. Like, I'm fine with expensive cosmetics, because, again, I think that's another one of the least harmful ways to monetize the game. But, my God, I would not spend money on these. Am I missing something? What do you guys think of the look of these card styles?
As someone who has played lots of digital games, whether it's card games or anything like that, they always try to do the thing with like, oh, we'll sell you skins, right? Valorant, you have like $120 skin bundles, whew, right? And it's just like your gun doesn't do anything differently, any of that, right? You could do that as much as you want because it doesn't affect the game. Personally, I just think this is hideous. This is heinous. I do not understand what the vision was when it came to these borders. They look so bad.
They look so bad. What do you think, Richard? Would you play them?
This is WotC 2026 in a nutshell, right? They're like, oh, I heard cosmetics are all the rage, right? No, yeah. I want alternate art treatments. I want new effects. I want new particles. I want like literally anything, and I will fork money over. You know, I occasionally follow mobile game sales. You know, Genshin Impact is still just hauling money in, right? Like, on the back of skins and characters, right? Like, Pokemon is still doing well. Like, the mobile market is so big, and here we are releasing, like, the stupidest frames I've ever seen in my life. Like, I don't want a new frame. Like, if your idea is we'll take this existing art and we'll apply new treatment to it, Parallax, whatever, right? Like, don't want any of that. I want a new version of this card that is unique, that I have never seen before. I want a new animation. I want it to do different things on the board when I play. I want my opponent to fear the size of my wallet when it comes down, right? Like, this is just, like, bad, right? Like, so I don't know, right? Like, this is the thing. Like, would you collect this? I'm like, yo, if you gave me these by default, I would ask you to remove them from my account.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I would file it to be like, yo, these hideous styles are here. Can you get them off? Thank you. Right? So I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, I know what they're thinking. They're thinking things like, oh, it's just like one dev's worth of time for a week and it'll make some money. It's fine. But it is so like brand damaging that you should like not do this. Right? Like, it's damaging the brand when we see this. Right? So
it doesn't look good. I understand the digital skins. You want to sell all that. And naturally, a company, a business would want to try to cash in on that mobile money that Richard's talking about. But, oh my God, at least some effort or something into where you at least try to. What is this, by the way? It's like mustard Cheeto border. I don't understand.
I don't know. Like, the green color is just like almost painful to look at. It's like nuclear waste or something. It's just a super neon green. Like, the color.
They're testing for Fallout.
They
oh, okay.
They are. If any WotC people are listening, plug your ears for the next like 30 seconds because I don't want to give you this idea. But you know where this is heading, and because I just did this in Hearthstone.
Oh,
so I think it's going to come to Magic. I'm pretty sure they're going to end up adding a way to gamble for these into the client. Like, it's going to be some sort of, like, you can pay your gold or gems and we'll spin and you get a random box, kind of like the loot boxes, and it could be one of these or it could be a sleeve or some sort of, like, cosmetic.
Do you play TFT
at all, Seth? I imagine
this
is where we're heading. I haven't. No, I probably would actually like it. It sounds like a game I'd like, but I've never played it. Do they do that, too? Is that a big thing in TFT?
Very fun game. Luckily, you know, its base game is free, but how they get you is like, oh, do you want the fancy board? Well, you got to buy gacha rolls.
Yep.
Oh, and it's like hyper mythic. I think on average, you probably, unless you get lucky, it's like probably like $400 or $500 to get the board. And then they broke it down to where, okay, you can also pay to have your portal jump animation. So they've monetized every single base part of it. If you want, luckily, again, I don't care because it's not a necessity. Right, yep. I will stick with my ugly base versions, Richard. Since base version is hideous cards to Richard,
and do you think that'll happen, Richard? Like, are we gonna have some sort of gambling built into Arena in every game? Is that just the direction
our
culture is heading?
Doesn't CS do this with skins or something and loot box? Didn't they get into some hot water? But
so there's a loophole, I think.
You got to tread carefully, right? But you're just adding more gacha or crack packing, as us old timers call it, right? So they will do it. But again, the thing you're cracking for needs to be desirable, right? I'm not cracking anything for these, right? Like, if they released the loot box tomorrow, I would just hoard them. I'm like, okay, surely there's going to be an update where they're going to swap out the results. Like, I'm not cracking it. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? Right? So, we're not. I don't know, man. Like, what were they? It bothers me because these are resources that could have spent testing Arena, could have added, like, literally any new features since beta, right?
It would have been more beneficial
anything.
To just give that dev the week off to rest up and recuperate for the next week, and we would have come out further ahead, yeah. Speaking of generosity in Wizards, though, they are doing something sneakily generous on Arena. There's a free... it's sneaky because no one knows about it, but now they're going to. You can get a free cabbage pet just from playing Magic Arena. If you would like the cabbage pet, when you go to play a game and it's the avatar board, one of the boards has the cabbage merchant's card on it. If you spam click that until it breaks, you will get a message in your inbox after the game from Arena granting you a free cabbage pet. So if you run into
from
that board and you see
himself.
The cabbage cart, do some mashing and you'll get a free cabbage. Some free who wouldn't want a free cabbage on Magic Arena?
Should I launch Arena to do this?
Yeah, get your cabbage, Richard.
Sick,
get your cabbage.
By the way, after
the cabbage man.
Oh my god, these are the ugliest borders ever. Oh yo, hold on, a cabbage? That's sick. Hold on, let's
I mean, that is
that.
Kind of a cool Easter egg.
It is
do
sick,
I like that they didn't announce it and someone just figured it out. Yeah.
That is super sick.
A couple other quick topics before we wrap things up today. Final Fantasy, I don't know if you noticed this. Someone posted this on Twitter a few days ago, but Square Enix, the company that runs Final Fantasy, their merchandising profits literally doubled with the release of the Final Fantasy set. A huge, huge increase. So apparently, doing these crossovers, not just good for Wizards, who had their best-selling set of all time, but apparently it's working out for Final Fantasy as well.
I mean, at this point now, it's all but locked in that we're pretty much going
to
go back, right? Between both companies,
right?
like drooling over how much money that this has made. There's still all
I
the
don't
side
need
games.
Anymore Final Fantasy VII cards.
No, yes, I don't either. I do not want
and they're
anymore.
They're just
going to
make more Final Fantasy VII cards, probably with the release of the third one, right? So,
yeah, that's probably fair. Okay, that's right, because there's still the third chapter, the closing chapter of the remake, so that'll line up. But they could easily also do, like, you know, Crystal Chronicles or whatever, all of the side games that Final Fantasy has.
Mm.
And I don't know. I think they're gonna return to this well. Very, very much so.
I imagine so. And Krim, you brought up this week, Mark Rosewater doing something unique at the Magic Con. What's going on with Mark and the Magic Con?
So apparently, Maro is going to be launching a new game. We don't know much about it yet, right? We know that I think it's going to be like he's going to talk about it at MagicCon Vegas, right? Is the way the article made it seem. And we don't know much about it other than that it's going to have to be sold as exclusively as a secret layer drop. I don't know what that means.
So you can't buy it in stores?
Like you're
limited?
Launching a new game.
I believe it's also an actual game because his blog post, it talks about that. You got to buy it as a secret lair. But it also talks about he'll be running events at Vegas for it. He'll be hosting events each day. So apparently you can buy the secret lair and then play with it. I know a lot of people are speculating it's a game called Mood Swings, which is a game that Maro apparently made years ago and has never been released. But he's talked about it a few times. And it's some game you can play in 5 minutes, apparently. So maybe
it's still this Mood Swings game.
It's not Magic,
but it's being sold as a secret layer.
It's being sold actually is called Non-Magic Redacted in his blog post. So I'm pretty sure it's not Magic, but it's being sold as a secret layer. Richard, what do you make of this?
I don't care.
good answer.
This is the man that when he gets like freedom to do whatever, like Unglued comes out. You know what I mean? Like when he gets to break the magic mold. So I'm like, I'm not interested in it. It's like some casual like party game or something. Like maybe we'll get
one. You don't like fun, Richard? Is that what you're saying? You don't like fun?
Yeah, but I'm not expecting like a Riftbound to pop out here. How about that, right? I'm expecting like fun like Sushi Go type game that Maro has made, right? But I'm expecting like an Unglued, Unhinged, whatever type deal, like maybe not as wacky in flavor, but like those are the mechanics he'll air to, because everything else we've seen in Magic, right? Like you want Mark Rosewater's design vision, well, it's Avatar the Last Airbender, right? It's Lorwyn Eclipsed, right? So yeah, I don't know, I don't particularly care about this. Like I'd rather just go play Riftbound or something, right? So if it's cheap, if it's $30, $20 for like a board game, yeah, we'll get one. We'll put it on our shelf. We'll play it once in a while. But I'm not expecting like a whole new TCG type kind of deal or something like that level.
If you're telling me it's a Sushi Go thing, Sushi Go is very fun. Like, oh my God, I love playing Sushi Go. But if you're telling me I'm getting that god awful Magic the Gathering board game.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Please no.
Never again do I ever want to see that board game. It like actually makes my eye twitch. It's so bad. But I'll gladly check it out because I do love those board games. And, you know, I still have board game nights with friends and whatnot. So if this fills that void, then perfect. As long as it's not another way to like, oh, we update it only through secret layers, and you can only get it through secret layers,
though, right? They're not like, yo, it's available in Target. It's available as a secret layer, exclusive, whatever. You know, that makes it sound like it's going to be expensive, right? Because if it's going to be $19.99, like, why are you calling it a secret layer and putting it on the secret layer website? Yeah. Why is it not sold through Hasbro Pulse or, you know, whatever, right? I'm a little suspicious. There's going to be some collector's version with Maro's toenails or whatever. Like, I'm expecting magification.
Poor Mark's toenails, by the way, who has now been referenced a lot in our lifetime on this podcast.
Way more than I ever would have guessed. Yeah.
Is this projecting? Hold on.
One final piece of news before we wrap it up today. The Magic movie, it's actually still happening. There's a director now, Matt Johnson, who did Blackberry in 2023 and Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, which is apparently coming out in a couple of weeks and was a show and now a movie's coming out. But according to him, he says, they're in the middle of it. It's very much happening. It's the biggest project I've ever been a part of in my life, and I'm amazed that it's happening. It's very much full speed ahead. So I don't know anything about Matt Johnson. Hopefully, I think he's like a comedian kind of guy, which is kind of a weird mix from what I have seen about his shows. But Blackberry was a serious movie.
Underestimate a comedian director. We got Jordan Peele, who went from comedy here. John Krasinski goes to make a Quiet Place. Jim Halpert made that. So, you know, like I am here for it. And I mean, comedians know about timing.
Woody, that's true.
Every Magic player loves good timing, right? You got to know about when to play your spells, instants, and things like that. Dude, maybe that makes him the perfect director.
It might be, but I mean, wait, it's encouraging to know.
Is it still animated? Like, is that where we're at? Do we know?
Live action adaptation, it says.
Oh, no. Okay.
I'll tell you what. It can't be worse. I feel like I have to knock on wood here, but it can't be worse than all of the live action Resident Evil movies. So they just have to make it somewhat decent, and I'll be happy. Like, video game adaptation, when I hear live action adaptation, I get worried, like Richard, but maybe this is the outlier. Yeah,
they've cracked the formula. One Piece, pretty good. Avatar, pretty good. So,
wait, Avatar?
The Netflix series, or not the movie, but the
series. No, I know, not the blue people.
You don't like it? I really enjoyed it. Oh my God. I'm going to fight Krim on this. It's like one of my favorite things. It's like Avatar that's like darker and grittier. The story is condensed and like mucked around, so the pacing is good and the effects are like really good. When you see like firebending or earthbending, you're like, oh, chef's kiss. That's what I think it is, right? And it's like an adult version of the cartoon. Because like I think the opening scene is like some guy just gets like incinerated, like literally put on fire and like dies. One of the earthbenders gets incinerated by the fire dish. You're like, ooh, I didn't expect this. Right?
But let me ask you this.
I really
do you
liked
remember
it.
When the Nolanverse was happening and everything that came out had to have that dark, grainy filter and had to like super edgy? Was that a good thing? Like I liked it in the movies that we had, but like I didn't need that for Avatar. I was like more than happy to just have a
I really
one
enjoyed
piece
it. And the story
like,
moved along instead of doing nothing for like the first
three quarters.
But if Magic could be Avatar live action, I'm all for it. But I have no hope that it will get there. I have no hope whatsoever.
Just do what Sonic does. I think they need to just lean into the camp. Sonic is like the best video game adaptation.
Sonic, Super Mario, like we've gotten good at these things, like the Marvel movies, right? Yeah. I hope, but you know what? Like Dungeons and Dragons, like most people love Dungeons and Dragons, the latest one.
Yeah.
Did very poorly at the box
Unfortunately.
Office. Right. Even though like most fans and most people are like, yeah, this is a great movie. So even if it's like sound technically and creatively, it can still flop big time. Right.
Creatively, it literally beat for beat was The Avengers. Seth, you now know what that is.
I know what an Avenger is now.
it played out almost exactly the same, but I do want to say, funny enough, Dungeons & Dragons felt like a Magic movie to me because I knew of Dungeons & Dragons stuff through Magic. So I was like, oh, that's that Magic card. That's that Magic card. And if that's how the reception to a, you know, solid, I would say, D&D movie is, I'm worried about Magic regardless then.
Yeah.
Good or bad.
On that note, everyone, I think that's all we got time for today. No fish mail this week, but send some in and we'll get to them next week. Richard, how do people send in fish mail so we can get to them in the future?
All right, hit us up at MTGGoldfish with the hashtag MTGFishMail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 574 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard Grimm, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a spectacular week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.